When the school year started, no one was able to leave the tower. I believe that was because Katashi sealed it almost immediately after his encounter with you, in order to prevent Vera and Karis from leaving the tower. I nodded, and she continued explaining. Weeks later, when the monsters were scouting the skies, that probably meant whoever he was looking for had managed to get out of the tower somehow. Either they left before Katashi sealed the exits, or perhaps they found some way around the seal. In either case, Katashi didn't find them, but he did talk to someone who convinced him to leave. Maybe one of our chancellors, perhaps someone in the government. That all made sense. I thought you might have been involved in getting the monsters to leave. Ordin shook her head. Can't take credit for that, sadly. I did, however, learn that people were starting to exit the tower again. That's when I went inside and spoke to the voice. He confirmed, among other things, that neither Karis nor Vera was still in the tower. I didn't find out how Karis managed to escape. The voice might have known, but he doesn't always tell me everything. It was shortly after that event that I tracked down her location. I scratched my chin. Okay, so she's in an obvious enough spot that we can easily find her, but no one has turned her over to Katashi yet? Why? Presumably because whoever spoke to Katashi the first time and gave him assurances was either incompetent or working directly with Vera. I balled my hands into fists. And that inaction just cost lives. Professor Ordin nodded. Yes. I will investigate who spoke to Katashi the first time. If they deliberately delayed giving him information, that is a crime that must be answered for. In the meantime, if Katashi's demand is for us to deliver Vera to him, we would be wise to do so. I nodded. If we know where she is, perhaps we should go as soon as we've rested. I see no reason to wait a full week, especially if there are potential enemies who may act before we do. Ordin glanced at Teft, then back to me. I concur, but with a few minor adjustments. First, if you are planning to head into the Climber's Gate, you must be properly prepared. Only 6 can enter that gate together. Jonathan, I assume you will be going? Teft grunted and stood up.
I wasn't particularly effective against Mizuchi, but I can handle a few floors of the tower. Let's hope the Visage decides to meet us at the entrance, though.
Right. I will also be accompanying you. Unfortunately, even if she is incapacitated, which may or may not be necessary, Vera will count as one of our 6. That means that you children will need to decide who else among you is going to be entering the tower with Corrin, if anyone. She paused, biting her lower lip before continuing. Under normal circumstances, I would advise that Corrin be escorted by a full group of professors or military officials. But given the likelihood of corruption in our ranks, I would advise we keep this entire plan to ourselves. I will inform some of the other Whispers of the situation so that they can spread this discreetly in case of our failure. Teft flexed a hand in the air.
We should at least tell Jack,
Professor Ordin sighed. Fine, fine. I agree that it's unlikely the Vice Chancellor would be working against our country. He's nothing if not a patriot. But do advise him to be cautious. In fact, perhaps we should just bring him here for the discussion after the children leave. Teft scratched his chin.
That would be a good idea.
All right. Professor Ordin turned back to me. Given how dangerous this could be, I'd advise you to buy and pack anything you might need for the tower tonight. Tomorrow, check the archives to research Karis and Vera. Perhaps you'll find something new. I'll scout Vera's location while you do that, and then meet you at the Divinatory at 11 bells. We'll confront her together and hopefully bring her to the tower directly afterward. I nodded. That should give us plenty of time to get this done before Katashi's deadline. Agreed. If there are no further questions, I'll bring you all back to the school, and you can head back to your rooms. Do not discuss anything related to Vera, Karis, or Katashi unless you are in a secure area. You should, however, decide who wishes to go to the tower. Just keep the conversation vague. Understood? We all nodded. If we hadn't been through so much, we probably would have had far more questions. As it was, everyone just looked exhausted. With another teleport spell, we found ourselves back in the middle of campus. We headed straight for the dining hall. Fighting and thinking, it seemed, were both hungry work.
I'm going with you,
Sarah opened with it almost as soon as the teleport had finished.
Okay, I replied uncertainly.
I would also like to accompany you,
Jin this time. A little surprising, given his reluctance before. Patrick nudged me next.
I'm in too, if you need me.
Marissa had an oddly introspective expression.
I'll go as well, of course, if you'll have me.
I turned to Jin.
Might be unwise for you to come with me, given how badly you were hurt.
He slipped the ring of regeneration off his finger, handing it back to me.
As I mentioned before, my patron's healing was quite effective. I no longer feel any pain from my injuries.
I accepted the ring, slipping it on and activating it immediately. I already felt much better than earlier, but using it more couldn't hurt. Probably. I wasn't actually sure what happened if you had a regeneration item on and you were already fully healed. Oh well. If I have three arms in the morning, I'll know this was a bad idea.
I glanced between my three candidates. I was pretty sure Sarah would murder me if I didn't bring her along. She was also pretty frustrated that I'd been leaving her out so much, and I couldn't blame her. Perhaps even more importantly, I didn't think anyone in our group could match her combat ability. Maybe Marissa, now that she'd hit Carnelian, but I doubted it. Sarah's summoned monsters made her vastly more dangerous than a standard attuned of the same level. So if things got messy, Sarah was the best option I had. That meant choosing between Patrick, Marissa, and Jin. And that was a rough decision to make. Patrick was my retainer. I wasn't very good with people, but even I understood that failing to bring him with me on a dangerous mission would potentially alienate him forever. So, that was bad. Marissa was Carnelian now, which meant she was clearly more powerful than the rest of us. That almost made the decision for me, but she looked exhausted. Sick, even. I remembered her tripping when we were heading back from the fight. Had she overused her mana that significantly? Jin seemed to be looking for a chance to redeem himself in our eyes for getting injured earlier. More importantly, he probably had something to prove to his patron Visage. This would give him an opportunity to do something to garner his Visage's favor, as well as repay the Visage for healing him earlier. It was a big opportunity for him.
I'm bringing Sarah. She's family, and her summoned monsters give us more flexibility. I saw a series of nods from the others. No one seemed to dispute that call. I turned to Marissa next and handed her the mana watch.
Marissa, can you check what your mana looks like right now?
She accepted the watch. She'd seen me use it dozens of times and knew how it worked. She turned, awkwardly slipped it into her shirt, then pulled it back out. The number read 0 of 172. I blinked at the reading. Not only was her mana capacity vastly higher than my own, it was even higher than I'd expected for a Carnelian. But her current mana was 0. That was strange. Even if she'd overused her mana, she should have recovered some of it by now.
Have you been feeling sick, Marissa?
She nodded.
Just a bit. Be it no mind.
Sarah turned to Marissa.
I think it's more than that. Katashi probably gave you an infusion of his mana when he enhanced your attunement. I don't think your body has acclimated to it yet. Every time I make a contract with a new monster, I experience something similar, just on a smaller scale. It looks like he gave you a lot of mana.
That explanation made sense. It was similar to the reason why enchanters and shapers couldn't safely transfer mana from one person into another. Marissa looked downcast.
What do I do?
Sarah waved her hand dismissively.
Oh, you'll be fine. You probably just need to rest for a few days. I think you should sit this one out, though.
I frowned at that. Marissa was our best option in terms of raw fighting ability. Still, if Sarah was right and Marissa was going to be sick for a while... Marissa looked at me.
Resh, I really didn't want to make the decision.
It's okay, Marissa. You saved me back there and defended Jin, too. You should be proud of that. Take the time to rest. You've earned it.
She gave me a nod.
If you're certain.
That left the even harder part.
Jin, Patrick, I want to bring both of you with me, but I can't. I also can't choose between you.
Patrick, I know you're my retainer, and that should take priority in most cases. Jin, however, just got healed by his patron Visage and has a good chance to earn that Visage's favor here. This isn't just about me.
Patrick nodded to that.
Yeah, I get it. But someone has to make a call.
They flipped a coin. Jin won the toss. Patrick sighed.
You just take care of each other in there. I wouldn't forgive myself if you're hurt.
I nodded.
We will, I promise.
Promises are so much easier to make than they are to keep.
Chapter 19. Borrowed Memories.
My first order of business was to prepare for climbing the tower. That meant getting supplies. I headed over to the climber's court, trusting that Lars would offer me some sage advice to accompany his sometimes absurd prices. It was evening by the time I arrived, hours after the attack, but I could still see smoke rising from buildings only a few streets down. I hadn't realized just how close the shop had been to the tower. The court hadn't been hit directly by the hero's end, but the doors and walls were marked with huge gouges. A large chunk of the eastern wall was completely missing. Through the crack, I could see Lars sweeping broken glass into a dustpan. His face was sunken into a deep frown of dejection, and a bright red wound was exposed across his left arm. I couldn't stand seeing him that miserable. I walked around to the front door, opening it. Lars startled at the sound, reaching for a hatchet on his belt and drawing it in a swift motion. Fortunately, he recognized me before he threw the thing, his expression softening.
Goren, you shouldn't be here. It's not safe.
I chuckled.
Oh, believe me, I know. I've actually got a story for you for a change.
Or I will when I get back. He gave me his fiercest frown.
Back? I don't like the sound of that, lad. What sort of nonsense are you up to now?
I grinned. It's a bit of a secret, but, hypothetically speaking, if I was going into the tower, what would you recommend that I bring? He set the broom and dustpan aside, folding his arms, which just gave me a closer look at his injured arm. I walked closer, slipping the ring off my finger and offering it to him.
Your arm's cut up pretty good there. Put this on for a bit. Regeneration ring.
He accepted the ring, turning it over in his hands for a moment with a frown before slipping it on to the pinky finger of his injured arm.
This is a citrine level item, lad. Where'd you pick it up? You shouldn't you just be handing something this valuable out to anyone.
Not exactly mine. I'm borrowing it from Professor Orden. Possibly forever, depending on how things go. He laughed.
Borrowing it forever, eh? Seems like a good deal. I suppose I'll borrow it in turn, but not for quite as long. Maybe half as long.
Seems reasonable. So, suggestions? He looked down at me, narrowing his brows.
You're serious?
I nodded gravely, completely serious.
Best suggestion? Don't go until you're at least carnelian. You need a shroud to keep yourself safe in there.
I tilted my head to the side. A shroud? Isn't that a guardian thing? He waved a hand to show partial agreement.
Not quite. Everyone who hits carnelian or above gets a shroud. You're an enchanter. That's the aura you see when you look at them.
So it's just another name for an aura, then?
No, it's more specific. There are lots of types of auras. You might have an aura of fire around you because of an item, for example. A shroud is your personal aura. It comes from mana leaking right out of you. That's not a bad thing, though. It protects you, like a barrier that's always on.
That did sound useful, and it helped explain why powerful attuned were so resilient. Maybe that was how Karis survived being slammed into a pillar by Katashi.
Okay, and I presume the stronger the attuned, the stronger the shroud?
Aye, and the more control you get over it. Guardians are specialists at using their shroud, as you mentioned. That's why even Quartz Guardians have one. They develop them earlier and learn more tricks, like focusing the shroud over a specific part of the body to punch someone really hard.
I scratched my chin. Good to know. What can higher-level attune do with their shroud?
All sorts of things. The most important is that sunstones learn to suppress their shroud. That makes it so enchanters like yourself and diviners can't tell how powerful they are at a glance. Terrible idea if you might get into a fight, since the shroud actually gets weaker. It's not just hidden. Many powerful attuned keep their shroud suppressed most of the time to make it harder to gauge their strength.
I nodded. That helped explain why I could never get a good read on some of the people I'd looked at, like Professor Orden or Derek. Orden could have easily been explained by using illusions. She was a shadow, after all. But Derek seemed combat-focused. He was probably just hiding his power the same way that most nobles hid their hands with a glove. Lars continued.
Beyond that, I've heard of Citrines extending their shroud to cover other people, or reshaping them the way a guardian can from the beginning. Not sure what else they can do. Never got past Sunstone myself.
Okay, let's assume I don't have time to hit Carnelian, but I'll try. What else should I bring?
A backpack. Food that's easy to store. Water. Ideally an item that will make water for you. Plan for a week. It usually takes 2 to 3 days to find an exit, but you want to be prepared for worse situations. Oh, and extra socks.
I blinked.
Extra socks? You never can have too many extra socks. Don't doubt me on this. You'll regret it if you do.
He nodded sagely. The wound on his arm was already starting to visibly glow and scab over. That ring worked faster than I'd expected.
I'd definitely need that ring in the tower, too. Presuming Orden didn't take it away from me.
Okay, any particular magical items you'd recommend? Be direct with me. I'll buy something from you if you say that I need it, presuming I can afford it.
I can give you some recommendations. What's your price range?
I'd saved up quite a bit over the last couple months by making my own supplies. I had about 80 silver on me, far more than I'd ever carried in the past, aside from when I'd bought the supplies needed for Sarah's summoning enchantment gauntlet. In a better situation, I would have used that money to buy supplies to make myself something, but I didn't have time. I have 80 silver. I intend to spend as much of it as necessary here, right now. Lars gave me a serious look, nodding slowly.
I'll put together a few things for you.
I reached out a hand. Give me that broom. Then we'll look at items afterward. He reluctantly surrendered the tool, and I worked on finishing sweeping the glass into a manageable pile. After that, we swept it into a bag for disposal. There wasn't much we could do about the wall, so I helped him drape a tapestry over the hole. I left the shop with the ring back in my possession, 10 silver in my pocket, and more than 300 silver worth of items. In exchange, I'd made him a promise. I'd be back to shop there again soon. Back at my apartment, I set down my newly acquired items. It was time to take a full inventory and pack. Of the options Lars had offered me, I'd picked out a single item that I considered essential. A real, functional return bell like the ones we'd used during our tests. According to him, it wouldn't work in certain rooms in the tower. Apparently they had varying degrees of protection against teleportation, but it would work in some of them. I'd considered picking up something with more of a direct combat application or something to enhance my attunement, but honestly, getting out of this with my friends and myself alive was my highest priority. One important thing was that unlike the ones we'd used during the test, this return bell would require channeling a considerable amount of gray mana into it to activate. This was good in some respects. I didn't want to ring the bell accidentally while I was walking and end up by myself outside. But it did mean that it might take an extra second or two to activate the item, and I knew that could be dangerous. I'd have to be ready for that. The return bell came along with a second item, a metal rod that served as an anchor for the bell's teleportation destination. I hadn't seen anything like that during our tests, but presumably they had something similar built into the main room. My current plan was either to leave the pole in my room or to plant it just outside the tower. I'd probably talk to Professor Orden before deciding. After I'd picked up the bell and rod, he'd sold me 3 more items that he considered essential. A flask that refilled itself with ordinary drinking water every 4 hours, a cloak that regulated the wearer's body temperature, and a mana-powered lantern that generated heatless light.
They all sounded more like camping supplies to me than preparation for a dangerous journey in the tower, but when I considered that the average tower journey lasted days, it made a lot of sense. Moreover, the lantern would be handy in any pitch-black rooms similar to the one we'd encountered in our first test. Even accounting for his usually inflated prices, I owed Lars quite a bit for practically forcing the things on me. If I made it out of this alive, I'd find a way to repay him eventually. Aside from that, I'd picked up a large, ordinary backpack. I stuffed the cloak inside along with the lantern. After that, I packed a couple extra sets of clothes, and several extra pairs of socks, as Lars had insisted. After that, enchanting supplies. I didn't have a lot of gems left, just a handful of Class 1 gray ones, a Class 1 mind gem, and the Class 2 universal gem. Better than nothing. I packed my engraving rod and my etching rod, just in case. Finally, food. I attached a bedroll to the bottom of the backpack. I'd do without a sleeping bag or pillow. There wasn't room for other large items. The supplies I was more likely to need immediately went into my normal belt pouch. Those started with the book that put me in contact with the voice of the tower. I didn't plan to show it off to the others, but I wanted it handy in case of an emergency. I stuffed the demigauntlet in my side bag, along with my 10 remaining silver coins. Finally, the bell, along with the anchor rod that went along with it. I really hoped I wouldn't have to use it, but given my luck, it was probably more a question of when I'd need to evacuate. After a bit of consideration, I put the self-refilling water skin in my side pouch, and then stuffed the water skin containing the enchanted water I'd taken from the tower in my backpack. I did not want to mix those up. I had 2 shield sigils now. The school-issued one went on my uniform as usual, and the phoenix sigil I'd made for myself went onto my pants to prevent them from interfering with each other. I'd considered making a third, but that ran a much greater risk of interfering with all 3. I'd probably get that sorted out eventually, but I didn't have time to experiment. I kept the ring of regeneration on. I'd need to ask Orden about how long it was safe to use it. While I was thinking about the ring, I inspected the runes on it. They were etched on the inside of the band. It looked like delicate work. The ring had to be made of some kind of rare material to hold that amount of mana in such a small object. Most of the runes weren't ones I was familiar with, so I looked them up. There were 2 fairly standard life runes, one for the actual healing effect, and another to cause the ring to naturally recharge. Next to them, a life mana capacity rune to prevent the recharging rune from overflowing it. Another couple runes required mental mana. I presumed one was for detecting the user's injuries. I recognized the one next to it, which was designed to recharge the mental mana required for the other rune. The next one was probably a mental mana capacity rune, but it was a slightly different design from the one I usually used, probably because it was for a higher capacity. The last one I recognized even more easily, a standard activation rune that required the user to channel gray mana into it. Unlike the variant used on dueling canes, this required the mana to come from the person wearing the ring. All in all, it was simple enough to make. It just required too much mana for me to fabricate one on my own. I also didn't have any life mana crystals. After finishing my research on the ring, I took my mana watch too. I never left home without it these days. I checked my mana before putting the watch away. 48 of 48. Apparently, yesterday's exertions had helped me improve a bit. I was still a ways off from Carnelian, though. Most people seemed to reach Carnelian at around 60 mana. I'd have to survive without a shroud for a while longer. Before leaving, I briefly unpacked my book to write a quick message to the voice of the tower. I didn't know when I'd get another chance. Dear voice of the tower, I'm preparing to head back to the tower along with Professor Orden. If we're successful, we'll be bringing Vera along with us. Katashi has asked me to turn her over to him, and if I fail to do so, he'll be sending a stronger attack against the city. In order to ensure the safety of the city, I must succeed. Any assistance you could provide would be greatly appreciated. If nothing else, please make sure someone else succeeds if I fail. Best, Corin.
Finally, I had to pick which sword to take with me. Selyse Leanne was tempting, since it was clearly the more powerful and versatile weapon, but it did have that nasty downside of nearly killing me on occasion. My self-enchanted sword was much safer to use, but I didn't know if it would be enough to handle the strongest monsters we might run into. So I brought both. I wasn't planning to wield them both at the same time, of course. I was nowhere near dexterous enough for that. I just hand one or the other off to Sarah or Jin, since they didn't have any magical weapons. Well, that wasn't completely accurate. I'd enchanted Jin's revolvers, so they were technically magical weapons, but they had limited ammunition, so he might still want the sword. I felt a little awkward walking to the divinatory with two scabbards bouncing on my hips. I'd need to get rid of one of these things sooner rather than later. As I approached the divinatory, Jin opened the door from inside and waved for me to enter. I blinked. Had I told him what time I was heading over here? I was pretty sure I hadn't. Maybe his real attunement was Diviner, or something similar from Delanos. I think they had one called Seer, maybe, or Oracle, something like that. It didn't matter at the moment. Having Jin present was probably going to be a benefit. He'd provide me with another set of eyes to search and another voice to ask questions. I nodded to him, and he silently fell into step behind me. We headed inside. I'd been in the divinatory before, but I'd never been back to the archives. Fortunately, Jin seemed to know the way. I waved at a few other students and faculty as we headed toward the back of the building. The other people present seemed exhausted and a little dazed. I didn't blame them, considering the events of the day before. I hadn't slept well either. "This is it," Jin pointed at a double door with a single large lock at the back of the facility. I inserted the key, turning it, and sliding the doors open. The archive was a room of clinical whites and sterile grays. It was structured like a library with dozens of rows of long shelves, but only a few of them contained books. Most of the shelves were stacked to near overflow with boxes of file folders, and a few other shelves carried fist-sized memory crystals. The room's most unusual feature, however, was the shimmering blue-skinned woman hovering over a platform in the center. Aside from the blue skin, she looked mostly human. She had long brown hair and wore a tailored suit that was a shade darker than her skin. The platform was marked with numerous runes, some more familiar than others. I thought it was a barrier at first glance, but it took me a moment to realize it wasn't to keep danger out. It was to keep her inside. She turned toward us as we entered, grinning cheerfully and waving.
"Oh, new visitors! Come in, come in!"
I turned to Jin, giving him a confused glance. He shrugged and we stepped in. I waved at the trapped woman.
Hello? I'm Corin.
She blinked, her eyes turning pure white when she reopened them. After a few moments of staring, her pupils slowly reappeared. The effect was disconcerting.
"Corin Cadence, it's a pleasure to meet you. I'm researcher 437C. How can I be of service today?"
I took a step closer, tilting my head to the side.
"Are you trapped in there?"
She laughed. Or at least, I thought she did. The sound was too high-pitched to be human, somewhere in between a chuckle and some kind of exotic bird call.
"No, no, silly. This," she knelt and tapped the platform, "provides me with mana. It's powered by the crystals in the sides, so please don't touch those."
Jin stepped forward.
"Is that Kalish technology? Are you some kind of automaton?"
She turned toward Jin, a confused expression on her face.
"Oh, hello. I barely noticed you there. Yes to your first question, no to the second. I'm what you would call a summoned monster, although I don't really like the second part. A little cruel, don't you think?"
Jin gave a non-committal grunt in reply.
"I agree," I chimed in. "You're intelligent, and you don't seem particularly monstrous. Is there a term you'd prefer? Summoned person, perhaps?"
She raised a finger to her lips.
"I hadn't really thought about it. Maybe next time you visit, I'll have an answer for you."
I nodded. "In the meantime, I could use some help. I take it you oversee this facility?"
"Sure do. I know it backwards and forwards. Well, the center part, at least."
She grinned.
The rest a little less, but still pretty well.
I waved at the platform. Is that because you can't leave the middle?
I can, but only when I have an external power source. Usually that means when my summoner is here to provide me with mana. Some other forms of mana can keep me stable for a time, but it's usually safest for me to stay here.
I scratched my chin. Just how long have you been here?
Oh, I've been working at this facility for about 3 years now. It's quite nice.
I blinked. I'd never heard of a summoned person being summoned for anywhere near that long. Most summons only lasted from minutes to hours, as far as I could tell. That's very impressive. I've never heard of anyone like you. Can I ask where you're from? She beamed, stretching her arms.
Well, that's a bit of a long story. Researchers are core elements for the function of each of the shifting spires. Normally, we don't come in contact with people, but someone was clever enough to find us and make a pact with me. Or original me, anyway.
I don't suppose you could tell me where they found you or who your summoner is. She shook her head. Okay, I continued. What should we call you?
Oh, just researcher is fine. That's what everyone calls me. People keep offering to let me pick a name, but I don't really see a point. Researcher describes my function accurately.
I nodded. I could see the logic there. Okay, researcher. As it happens, we're here to do some research.
Perfect!
She clasped her hands together.
How can I help you?
Well, I suppose we should start by looking for anything regarding Karis Salirian. Her eyes flashed white again.
Karis Salirian. Records and memory crystals are in row 14F, third shelf toward the center.
She waved to her right.
It's over there, three shelves down from where I'm standing.
Thanks. I followed her directions, walking past row after row of boxes. Each box had a slat beneath it, with a brief description of the contents. It looked like it had been organized alphabetically by the first word. I found Karis Salirian between Keldon Andis and Karen Valir. I picked up the box eagerly. It was completely empty. I went back to the researcher. The box is empty. Do people usually take things out of here? Her eyes widened for a moment.
No one is supposed to remove anything from the archive without authorization. There wasn't any given to take the files on Karis.
Jin raised an eyebrow. You're sure of that? She turned toward him, blowing a hair out of the way of her mouth before speaking.
Yes. If someone had given permission, they'd have to tell me about it, and I'm a researcher. I have a perfect recall of everything I've ever experienced.
An eidetic memory? Or something even more advanced? That could be useful. Do you recall anyone else looking for his files, then? She nodded.
Yes, several people have, but not for several months now.
Interesting. They could have been stolen a while ago, then. Who was the last person you remember taking a look at information on Karis? She frowned.
I'm afraid I'm not authorized to answer that question.
Of course not. That'd be far too easy. I glanced at Jin. He shook his head. Okay, it wasn't Jin. Fair enough. Besides, I returned the memory crystal he'd taken. That should be here, even if Jin was the one that took everything else. That means someone took everything at some point after I returned the crystal. I sighed. Okay, we can check some other things then. Researcher perked right back up.
Excellent! What else?
How about Vera Corrington? Researcher pointed to her right again.
Further down, row 22D. No memory crystals on her, but we do have a few files.
I found her files without incident. Well, some files, anyway. I had no way of knowing if there had been others that might have been stolen at some point. I handed half the stack to Jin, and we walked back to Researcher. Anywhere we can sit to look at these?
Toward the back of the room, left corner.
We followed her instructions, found chairs, and sat. The first thing I found was a copy of a Kaelford passport. In specific, a diplomatic passport, indicating she was here in Velia on government business. I wondered why we had a copy of it here. Maybe this divinatory served as a general information repository for the whole city? That document didn't have anything specific on why she was there, but there were several other typewritten pages in the folder. One of them was a copy of her documentation for entering the Serpent's Tower. Glancing over that was much more enlightening. Name, Vera Corrington. Age, 26. Ethnicity, Kaelford. Attunements, Analyst.
reason for entering tower, accompanying multinational climber force for confidential research, code QSTN. There was a bit more info on there, but nothing nearly as interesting as her reason for going in there. I'd have to see if I could find out more about that research project. I showed Jin that page. He just said, "Interesting," and went back to his own reading. I dug a little further, finding a list of the people who had accompanied her into the tower. Lawrence Gold, Rochelle Gold, Carter Bishop, Ekion Valden, and one name that I actually recognized, Elora Theus. That's the summoner that was feuding with Derek, and also the same Theus that was in the Council of Lords with my mother. Could she be the one who's preventing Vera from being arrested? If she's a council member, she'd probably have sufficient influence. House Theus was an old family. They were one of the founding families of the city, much like House Hardian. I didn't know how far their influence extended, but either she or one of her relatives was definitely a council member. I pointed her out to Jin. He seemed more interested this time.
If House Theus is involved with whatever this research was, you're going to be in for some trouble.
I rubbed my temples.
More than I'm already in? You'd be surprised.
Still, we should dig into this more. I haven't found anything of interest in this pile. I'll go see if I can find anything on Elora Theus or that code name.
I nodded, continuing to read more about Vera. I found references to her coming into the city with her brother, Aloris, so I'd been right on that regard. More references to that secret project, but nothing concrete on what it was about, or if she had any sort of sponsors. Jin sat back down a few minutes later with a new stack of papers.
Researcher informed me that we're not authorized to know about that secret project, so she couldn't help. She did point me at the files on Elora Theus, though.
We dug through those. Elora Theus was a Lorien Heights graduate and longtime climber. There were records of dozens of visits she'd made to the Serpent Spire, as well as records of her leaving the country to visit other spires. That meant she might have foreign attunements in addition to local ones. Derek had accompanied her in many of the tower visits with earlier dates. Those seemed to have stopped right before the time Elora had entered the tower with Vera. Now that was interesting. I'd known they had some sort of falling out. Could it have been directly connected to whatever this secret project was? I'd have to tell Professor Orden about this. It seemed like a potentially significant lead.
I did have one final thing to look into before we left, though. I returned the files that I'd been reading through to their proper places and walked back to Researcher.
Can you direct me to any files on Tristan Cadence?
She grinned.
Of course. They be in row 20A.
I withdrew the single file with a shaking hand. Name, Tristan Cadence. Age, 17. Ethnicity, Valia. Attunements, none. Reason for entering tower, judgment. And I read further. Date of entrance, 4/13/55. Date of exit, not applicable. Status, presumed deceased. It hurt to see the words, even though they didn't differ in any way from what I'd expected. There were other pages in the file, old records from his schools, a record of his pre-judgment practice test, which had been a rousing success. He'd been brilliant from everything I could see, physically fit, amazing grades in all of his classes. How had he failed? There were no hints here, no signs of any conspiracy, no records pointing at secret projects or hidden agendas. Just another ordinary 17-year-old lost to the tower. I set the files back in the box and walked back to Jin.
Let's go.
He set his own papers down.
I did find something else, actually.
I raised an eyebrow.
Oh? One of the records on Elora referenced her leaving an item at this facility for research. Could be connected to this secret project.
I grinned.
Nice find. What is it? Files called it the Jaden Box. Let's go ask Researcher about it.
We put Jin's files back and moved back to the center of the room.
researcher was floating in a cross-legged sitting position and rotated toward us as we approached.
Oh, hello again. I trust you found everything you needed?
Jin nodded. For the most part, although I did find an unusual reference. What can you tell us about the Jaden Box?
Researcher's eyes did the creepy white thing again.
Jaden Box, attributed to Rin Jaden, sorceress of the pre-attunement period. Artifact demonstrates remarkable storage and summoning capabilities beyond the scale of all other known items. Deposited here by Alora Theus on 6-12-51. Research in progress.
Jin nodded.
Is the box connected to this secret research project QSTN?
Researcher shook her head.
Unrelated. The box is simply a powerful item. It is not classified as secret.
What does it do exactly?
Jin continued.
The box is capable of storing items that appear to be too large to fit inside an extra-planar space. In addition, when an object is placed inside and a specific command word is used, it is capable of performing a summoning spell that will attempt to summon the person connected to the object.
My eyes widened. What are the restrictions on that?
Researcher turned to me.
No known distance limitations. This summoning effect appears to be capable of bypassing most, if not all, anti-teleportation limitations. Lead researcher Orden has placed an additional external seal on the box to prevent reckless tests, such as attempting to summon visages, which she deemed to have potentially catastrophic consequences.
No distance limitations. Could I summon Tristan with it? I'd need an item strongly connected to him. I had a few things in my room that had belonged to him, but I wouldn't want to risk the chance they'd fail. I was confident I could find something at home, though. Maybe even a brush that still had some of his hair. It sounded so easy. So much easier than trying to climb to the top of the tower. Would it work if he was dead? I'd need to find out more about this.
Researcher had mentioned lead researcher Orden, meaning Professor Orden was studying it.
I'd seen the box before. It had been in her drawer, and I'd marked down the few runes I could remember.
I scratched my chin. Is the Jaden box in this facility right now?
Researcher nodded.
Yes, although access to the item is restricted to members of lead researcher Orden's team.
I raised the key that Orden gave me.
As it happens, we work for Professor Orden.
Not strictly a lie, but I felt a little bad for the deception.
Jin gave me a raised eyebrow, but researcher just beamed at me.
Of course. It is in a box labeled Lyris Orden on row 15C. Be advised to follow all the instructions with the attached documentation. Also, the box is inside a safe. The safe code is 13963.
Sorry, Professor Orden. You were the one who encouraged me to break in here and take what I needed.
I found the box. Jin followed close behind me.
Are you certain this is wise?
I glanced back at him.
No, but this could give us a considerable amount of safety if things go badly. For example, if we step into the tower and we can't find Katashi, maybe we could find something connected to him and use this to summon him.
Jin nodded.
I see the logic, but we should save that for a last resort. It is clear that using the box on a visage could have dangerous consequences.
Orden should have a better idea of how safe it would be. We can ask her if things get desperate enough that the box seems necessary. For the moment, we'll be discreet.
He put a hand over his forehead.
That's part of the problem. You don't think she's going to notice you took it?
I shrugged. I've got so much magic stuff at this point that I doubt she'll notice the aura on it standing out. I'll only take it out in emergencies. If she does figure out that I took it, I'll just refer back to her earlier desire for whisper candidates to show initiative.
Jin sighed.
Fine, but we're putting it back when we're done.
That was just vague enough that I could agree to it.
Sure.
We found a safe inside the box, along with research notes, just as researcher had indicated. I skimmed through the notes first. Jaden box. Object classification. Artifact. Miscellaneous. Attunement level. Unknown. Exhibits properties that exceed emerald capabilities. Description. The Jaden box is believed to be a creation of the legendary sorceress Rin Jaden. It demonstrates forms of pre-attunement period sorcery that cannot be easily duplicated in the modern period. To date, we have discovered three of the box's functions.
First, if the word store is spoken aloud while in physical contact with the box and followed by another word or short phrase that describes the object, any object placed inside the box within the next 10-second period will be transported to an extraplanar space. When the box is opened and the command retrieve is given, followed by a phrase corresponding to an item that has been stored, the stored item will be teleported out of the extraplanar space and appear directly above the box. Fortunately, large objects will be shunted out of the way if there are people in the space above the box. This has saved more than one researcher from being inadvertently killed by teleportation fragmentation. There are some restrictions on what can be stored. See research document ENX-4. The third function of the box is the most dangerous, and thus additional limitations have been placed on the box through the creation of an outer shell. See shell diagram. When an item is placed inside the box and is not stored in the extraplanar space, the command summon can be used, followed by the name of an individual with a strong connection to the item. For example, a vial of Professor Lyris Orden's blood was successfully used to summon her from the base of the Serpent Spire to the research laboratory. Early studies indicate that the connection utilized by the box to summon an individual appears to be a mana signature. This means that any object that stores some of the mana of an individual, such as magical items created by the individual, should potentially be usable as a summoning focus. Studies on this object have been restricted for two reasons. One, the unclear limitations have been a cause for concern that a researcher could inadvertently summon a powerful entity that may take issue with being summoned. For example, one of the visages. The second reason is that the summoning spell consumes a vast amount of air and transference mana. In specific, we approximate that the discharge is roughly 20,000 mana of each type. While the box does recharge its mana over time, it does so at a rate consistent with standard sunstone-level items, regaining approximately 100 mana per day. Thus, the summoning effect can only be used roughly once every 200 days. I wasn't able to analyze everything about the box, but I was able to sense the mana within it. There was a lot. Thousands, at least. I tried checking it with my mana watch, but it didn't register anything. The watch wasn't designed to interact with other items, and even if it was, this was a strange enough object that it might not have worked either way. More importantly, I was able to detect that the box wasn't currently recharging. That meant it already had a full charge of mana and could be used at any time. I scanned over the rest of the research. The diagrams of the runes were fascinating. I'd want to learn more about them later, but for now, I didn't have time. I was supposed to be meeting Professor Orden outside shortly. The limitations on the box meant that I wasn't going to be able to pick up just any old thing that Tristan had owned and throw it in there to summon him. I was already thinking of options, though. If hair from a brush didn't work, maybe one of my parents had kept some of his baby teeth. I'd find something. This was the best lead I'd ever found. I wanted desperately to drop everything and pursue it immediately, but first, I had people to save. Tristan wouldn't forgive me if I ran home and summoned him if it meant risking other lives, possibly thousands of lives, in the process. The safe combination worked. I pocketed the Jaden box. It was time to go meet with Professor Orden. Professor Orden was waiting outside when Jin and I left the divinatory. She was a little early, which wasn't a huge surprise. Her company, on the other hand, was unexpected. Derek Hardigan stood to her right side, a heavy backpack resting at his feet. I glanced to him, then back to Orden. "What's this?" Derek grinned, reaching down with a hand to heft his pack over a shoulder.
"Looks like you're going to get one more chance to see me shine."
I waved my hands in frantic dismissal.
"No. No, not happening. Where's Teft?"
Orden rolled her eyes.
"Not coming. He sends his regards, but the Vice Chancellor forbade him from coming with us. Apparently, he's dealing with internal mana burns from the last time he went with you."
I winced, remembering Teft blocking the shockwave from the hero's end. That single attack had forced him to overuse his mana enough to cause internal burns? That's absurd. Just how powerful is that monster?
I sighed. Fine. I hope he recovers soon. But shouldn't we be bringing another professor along?
Derek grimaced.
Hey,
I get that you're angry about that whole survival match bit.
I glared at him. You could have gotten Sarah seriously hurt. He raised his hands defensively.
I would have made sure she was safe, believe me. Would have jumped straight back into the arena if she was in real danger, rules or no. I apologize. I should have been clearer about the situation up front.
I narrowed my eyes. I'm not the one you need to apologize to. He nodded.
Of course. I'll apologize to Sarah when I see her. But let me do something more than that. I'll make it up to you both. I put her in danger once, minimal as it might have been, but this time, I'll keep you safe.
I clenched and unclenched a hand in the air. I appreciate the effort, but I still fail to see why you're a better option than bringing another professor along. Derek glanced from side to side, his expression turning more serious than I'd seen it.
Look at me for a second. Really look.
I knew what he meant. I shifted my attunement on. He had a light red shroud, a standard aura for a carnelian, until it began to brighten. First to orange, then as the red burned entirely away, to yellow, and as my eyes widened, a tinge of blue mingled into the yellow, forming green. Emerald. Derek was an emerald. I took in a deep breath. For the first time, I could see why he'd been so arrogant about being able to handle the survival match alone. He had the strongest aura of any human I'd ever seen. That was not as reassuring as it should have been. I'd just seen his former partner's name on the list of people who had gone into the tower with Vera. Was that incident why they were feuding? Did Derek know something? Was he involved? He hadn't actually been one of the ones on the list to go into the tower himself, but then again, there was nothing that would have prevented him from going in just a bit earlier or later. This was important, but I couldn't think of an easy excuse to slip back into the archives to research him. I should have done it the moment Alora's name had come up, but I hadn't thought he'd be quite this closely involved. I closed my eyes, disabling my attunement.
I can see what you mean. Keep that to yourself, please. A good number of people already know, but I try not to draw too much attention.
I nodded, my eyes reopening. I could see why keeping that degree of power secret was a big deal. It could draw a lot of unwanted attention, and given how powerful emeralds were, I suspected they might be considered military assets. That also raised the question of whether or not Derek was involved with whoever had been talking to Katashi before and keeping Vera's location concealed. I had a few options at this point, and I didn't like any of them. I reopened my eyes.
I'll be willing to take you along if Sarah doesn't have an objection.
Let me talk to her about it privately first. Professor Orden folded her arms. We don't have time for distractions. Derek is, whether I like it or not, our best chance at completing this assignment safely.
We need to pick Sarah up before we go confront Vera in either case. Can you teleport us to her room? I'll make the conversation quick.
Fine. What dorm is she in?
Tortoise female number 14.
I stepped in closer, formulating the first bits of a plan. This was going to be more complicated than I hoped. We formed a circle, and once again, my head swam as Orden teleported us. At least I didn't have a concussion this time. Sarah opened the door to her room. I stepped inside. The others were all standing outside the building, idly chatting. Or maybe plotting my doom. Possibly both. I raised a finger in a gesture for Sarah to be quiet, then set down my backpack and withdrew my etching rod. As she watched with a raised eyebrow, I channeled a bit of mana into the rod and carved a noise-dampening rune into the door. A bit of gray mana, a bit of transference mana, and the rune was completed. I didn't bother writing more runes to set the rune to recharge. I didn't want to waste the time or mana. I put the etching rod back, more confident now that it would be extraordinarily difficult to hear our conversation outside. I nodded to Sarah.
We can talk now. She folded her arms.
Can we start by discussing how much you owe me for wrecking my door?
I chuckled. I'll get it fixed for you when this is all over. But we need to talk.
Sarah tilted her head to the side. I'd gathered that from the fact that you looked like you just found a group of assassins in your breakfast.
I nodded sagely.
Delicious but suspicious. Sarah's lips twisted into a half-smirk. That rhyme was a little weak, but I'll give you credit for effort.
Weak? I'd like to see you do better.
Sarah raised a finger to her chin. They were vicious and ambitious, but through a turn of fate capricious, one malicious assassin proved seditious, slaying the others in my dishes. Thereafter I discovered they were delicious and, moreover, nutritious.
You win this round, Sarah. She bowed at the waist.
Your acknowledgement is judicious.
I rolled my eyes. That one was a bit of a stretch. But seriously, we need to talk.
Sarah sat down on her bed next to a large backpack of her own. Okay, so talk. Teft isn't coming. Apparently he's too badly hurt from exerting himself on our last little mission. They sent Derek Hartigan instead. Sarah shrugged. Okay.
I blinked. You don't care?
I don't appreciate how little information he gave me before dragging me into that whole survival match thing, but it was still fun. And he's obviously a fighter. We could use someone who knows how to use a sword. No offense.
I nodded. None taken. Oh, that reminds me. I unbuckled my belt, taking both scabbards off it. I brought two. You can pick one if you want one.
Oh, Patrick is going to be so jealous.
I blinked. Why?
You didn't notice? He's been staring dreamily at your swords for months. He's obsessed with those things.
I winced. I really hadn't been paying enough attention to what my friends were interested in. Now that Patrick was my retainer, I needed to make more of an effort to understand him. Okay, I'll definitely need to get him an enchanted sword sometime.
I shook my head. In the meantime, though, we've got more important matters to discuss. When Jin and I looked into Vera, we found out that Alora Theus, Derek's former beau, was one of the people who went into the tower with Vera. It's very likely she's connected with all this nonsense, which makes it possible that Derek is also connected.
Sarah leaned over, picking up Celise Leanne and testing the weight, then picked up my other sword and did the same.
And you're worried he's going to stab us in the back? Is that it?
Yeah. And he's emerald, Sarah. She set the sword down at that, staring at me.
You're sure?
I nodded.
Saw his shroud with my attunement. He's been suppressing it.
Sarah's hands clenched and unclenched in the air. It was a familiar gesture. I did the same thing when I was stressed. I hadn't realized she shared the habit.
That makes this rather awkward.
I nodded.
Yeah.
I told him that he could come along if you were okay with it. So we've got an excuse if you want to act more angry about the whole arena thing. She shook her head.
No. I think we should keep him close, even if we have suspicions. If we tell him off, he's free to wreak havoc out of sight. Maybe he goes and gets rid of Vera before we even reach her. Or if he's connected to Tenjin's disappearance, he could even go move Tenjin while we go in the tower. Or worse...
I nodded. I understand the idea of keeping an eye on him. But if he turns on us in the tower, there's really nothing we could do against an emerald. Unless you're holding out on me. That thing you did with Patrick was a pretty impressive trick. Sarah grinned.
It was. We've been practicing for weeks. Cooperative spells are much stronger than anything we can manage alone.
How do he even help you? I've heard of cooperative spells, but wasn't that an ice spell?
Ice and air. Elementalists can cast air spells. So he supplied the air mana, freeing me up to use all my mana for ice. We pushed as much power as we could into that one spell. But even then, that wouldn't even be citrine class. We couldn't scratch an emerald, and I couldn't cast that spell alone.
Hmm. I pointed at Celise Leanne. Could you draw mana from an item? Celise Leanne has an ice aura.
She frowned. I've got a limited degree of ability to work with ice from my bond. Maybe I could do something with it. Can't promise it would be as impressive as what Patrick and I could pull off together, but it might be better than what I can do on my own.
Okay, you should take that sword then, provided you don't mind the curse.
Curse?
The shopkeeper told me that it's cursed so that anyone who wields it dies. Probably just a ridiculous legend.
Sarah stared at the sword, then looked back at me. You've been using a cursed sword this whole time?
I chuckled. I don't think the curse is real, but if you're worried about it, I can hold on to the sword.
She picked the sword up. I'm not as trusting as you are, but if there is a curse, I'll beat it.
I grinned. Okay, so we're taking Derek?
She nodded.
Yeah.
Let's hope we don't regret it.
We finished packing Sarah's gear and headed outside to meet the others. Derek delivered on his promised apology, and Sarah accepted. It might have been my imagination, but I got the impression he looked just as suspicious of us as we were of him.
One more teleport. My stomach lurched as we arrived outside Corrington carriages. Derek looked at Professor